Welcome to Highway to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. Hope you're well, my friends. Thanks again to everyone checking in on us. Minneapolis is starting its healing process, and what we're witnessing is some really beautiful community coming together as we clean up and find ways to support what's been lost. And there has been a lot of loss. It's very difficult to witness. So many small business owners have been affected, but locals are pitching in and crowdfunding to rebuild their favorite stores and restaurants that were damaged or destroyed is happening. And, you know, I tend towards optimism, so I don't get pulled too far down when it comes to what has been physically lost. I can imagine the other side of this, and I believe that these neighborhoods will be rebuilt and that this experience will likely bring us even closer together as a community. The more difficult piece will be rebuilding confidence and trust in the governing bodies we fund to serve and protect us. Or are there other possibilities we haven't given enough consideration to? Do we change what we fund altogether? Reallocate funds to social programs instead of law enforcement, much of which would get used for the same areas in which police spend their time as first responders to challenges they're not well trained for? They're not social workers or care coordinators or therapists. Perhaps we've asked too much of them. There's just a lot to consider right now. The pressure on these communities, mostly people of color, across the U.S. has been building long before George Floyd, long before Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and the pandemic. And it's just amazing to see the demonstrations continue throughout this past weekend as they enter their third week. It feels as if we're getting a chance to reconsider what our society should look like. And I believe it's no coincidence that we are asking big questions right now in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic. The less optimistic side of me, though, warns that we will forget, that we're too often quick to move away from the painful truths of our country's past and the oppression still present. And if a shift is truly happening, this will be a marathon and not a sprint. And we'll need to carry the despair and anguish the whole way, or it's likely we will revert. This doesn't mean we can't still smile and laugh and love and find joy together. These are all essential to living and healing. But the pain of these memories must continue to have its presence. As my guest for today's episode, Udo Erasmus, reminds us, the cherished state is to be fully present in all of your being, simultaneously and in the world. He's here to share his story and guidance in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the show, I want to welcome you. Highway to Health is a place for you to explore and create your own blueprint for health. Having worked in integrative health for more than 20 years, I'm acutely aware of how all aspects of our lives come to have an effect on our overall state of being. And it is my hope that through the content and conversations that you get here, you'll be more engaged and empowered personally and in your communities. A thank you to the new supporters of the podcast. Your dollars are really helping us build the resource and support that we want to give to the community. If you'd like to contribute to this project, there are a couple of ways. One is financial. You can support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/highwaytohealth and click the link in the show notes on the app that you're listening on and become a supporter today. The other is by sharing the content that we create to help more people become aware of Highway to Health and the resource we provide. And if you're a health professional or involved in a health-related project, you can also connect with me on LinkedIn or through the contact page of our new website, highway2.health, so that I'm aware of your work. And I'd love to bring you into this community of health improvement influencers. So you may already be familiar with Udo's Oil, which is a blend sold in most health food stores and at Whole Foods that provides a full range of essential fatty acids. Back in 1980, after Udo was poisoned by pesticides, his life took a sharp turn as he was forced into an awareness of healing himself from the toxicity that he had allowed himself to be exposed to. He created Udo's Oil as part of this. But as he shares with me, having fled Poland during World War II to Canada, his recovery from pesticide poisoning was part of a process of healing on many levels. The oil became part of his inside-out approach to healing and his mission. Timeless and timely, here is my conversation with Udo Erasmus. We have some kind of interesting crossovers in our work. I just from kind of looking back, the way that you kind of went through a number of different trades and ended up in a field that you weren't necessarily planning on, but got directed into.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I studied biology because, or science, and then biology, and then psychology, just because I found them interesting.
Yeah,
was not a career move. And it wasn't until I got poisoned by pesticides that, given I had the background, I was actually quite well suited to do the work that needed to be done, both to get healthy and then to create a teachable field, develop a method for making oils with health in mind and develop flax oil and then get into the whole health, because biology is more about health than medicine.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
And I took a year of medicine to find that out.
Yeah, of course, right?
But when you study biology, nobody tells you that when you study the normal functioning of normal creatures, that's called health.
Right, right.
So you're studying normal function and they're studying disease.
Yeah, exactly.
And the idea is that if you look into the darkness long enough, then you're going to discover light.
Exactly.
And that's only true if you do it internally.
Yeah.
Externally, you don't look into darkness to discover the nature of light.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So my route was being in, I was an English major. I was planning on going into, a writer or a teacher of some sort. So the teaching was pretty strong for me. And I think that in my health career, I've worked in integrative health for 22 years. And it all came out of having sort of a chronic back issue that I realized, was probably due to, I was very physical as a young person. And even in the even in the jobs that I did, that was where I was kind of, I thought it was interesting. I did a lot of outdoor work, a lot of lawns and landscaping work. And I'm sure I was exposed to plenty as well, but it was more that I liked the being physical and the being outdoors part. And then I was also a musician for most of my 20s, trying to make somewhat of a career out of it. I don't know if I really wanted to do it full time, but that time period led me into really kind of exploring more about health. And then I ended up getting into a bodywork field and got very far down lots of different paths of bodywork and went back to school for that.
So what did you do? Massage and
Craniosacral. Yeah.
I have a friend who does it on me once in a while. It's amazing.
It is. And that was why it was like the less is more, kind of approach I just found working for so many different things. And I treat everybody from newborns to, elderly. So it's great. Yeah. I get to treat multi-generations of people and kind of get to be present for a lot of different, over 22 years, get to be present for a lot of different kinds of things in families and health challenges and stuff. So part of the podcast just came out of me wanting to sort of, I liked being in the middle of the conversations basically with the different care providers that I was involved with, and that it's allowed me to sort of have these conversations on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm an expert in any of these other fields, but I certainly am interested. So, and your subject in particular right now, we could go in a lot of different directions, but I'm really interested in what you're kind of currently digging into.
Everything affects health. So if you want to be healthy, you have to give everything its due.
Yeah.
And that includes self-awareness, and it includes being in touch with your life energy to be inspired. Then we talk about body, food, and fitness.
Yeah.
And a couple other things, digestion and detox. And then survival smarts, and then social group, and then environment, and then big picture. So I'm really interested in how all of those together affect health. Mm. The cherished state is to be fully present in all of your being simultaneously and in the world, and not lost in thoughts in your head. Because if you're not fully present, then you're probably lost in thoughts in your head.
It's interesting. I think there's been a big piece of my work that's just been about because I lived in New York for 13 years and I had started a storefront business where we did a lot of movement based work. So I also have this background in functional movement. So that was I would kind of go back and forth with people between hands on work and functional movement. And the thing that I found from that was that it wasn't so much about exercise per se. I wasn't interested in like all around fitness, although I was an athlete for a long time and I liked the challenge of those things. It was really what I found, because I did a lot of work with, women who were pregnant or that just had babies. I did a lot of work with people recovering from sports injuries or just, sort of chronic sitting postures from desk and that kind of stuff. And it was really about presence. It was really about developing the awareness in your body. We chose to only have one mirror in the whole place, and we only used it for, teaching basically for specific things. We wanted people to sort of understand their body and space. And between doing that work and you know, doing hands-on work where people experience their bodies, I just found people really went through big changes.
Yeah, well, that's the big one that isn't addressed is the internal work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's natural because our senses always take our awareness out into change, because whenever something changes, you have to assess it for survival.
Right.
Is this a friend or foe?
Right.
So we're automatically taken out, but we don't automatically go back to our connection with ourself.
Yeah.
That has to be deliberate. And what the only thing that calls us is an ache in the heart.
That's true.
That we call loneliness or longing or sadness or sorrow or grief or loss, you know, of feeling. And that's actually, and we don't get it explained to us, but it's actually the heart calling our awareness to come back home to life where all the goodies are,
right,
where all our wholeness lives, where all our joy is, where the peace that is real actually dwells.
Yeah.
So that is probably the most neglected, and I'm tending to go in that direction, although the oil is the one that got my name out there, and we can certainly talk about that as well.
If you don't mind going back to the sort of the beginning of things, just for anyone listening and doesn't know much about you, I mean, there's plenty on the internet about you, and you can go to YouTube and see a lot of things, but I'm sure you've gone through your story many times, but I think just the fact that it was such a pivotal turning point. I've told my story many times about, you know, what I experienced with my back and how it sort of transformed me in some ways. So back in 1980, what happened with you?
In 1980 was the starting of my work with oil. I got poisoned by pesticides that I sprayed carelessly for 3 years as a job, because I wanted to kill something after my marriage broke up.
Interesting.
So I sprayed. I mean, it's really crazy, right? When you know, right, you look back and it's like, I did what?
And lack of care for yourself on some level, right?
Totally. Yeah. And people actually warned me. I said, I walked barefoot over the lawns I had sprayed with weed killer.
Yeah.
And then the skin peeled off my feet. And that wasn't even enough. Somebody said to me, aren't you worried you're going to get poisoned? And my answer was, nah, I'm immune.
Yeah.
And then I got poisoned. we call that, or people call that sometimes, call that testosterone poisoning. It's what happens to young men before they have their first self-made disasters.
Right. It's true.
I'm immune. I'm immortal. And nothing can hurt me. Nothing can touch me.
Yeah.
The rules don't apply to me.
How old were you?
Yeah. I was at 38.
You were 38, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how long did it take you to detoxify, or how long did it take you to decide that you had to deal with it?
Well, I went to a doctor and said, what do you have for pesticide poisoning? And she said, nothing. That's how long it took me to figure out that health is my responsibility.
Yeah.
And then because I had the background, I decided, okay, body's made out of food. I knew that 98% of the atoms in your body are removed and replaced every year.
Yeah.
So that you're a major construction site. And because of that, if you raise a higher standard, you can rebuild your body to a higher standard within a year, 98%. And so I said, okay, well, let me just see what I can do to raise my standards. So I was mostly just thinking food, but of course, water, air, and thoughts and everything too. But at that time, I was more thinking food. And so I went into the research literature in Medline and looked up anything that had to do with health and nutrition, disease and nutrition. Mm-hmm. And see, I just wanted to see what the research was. And then I started taking supplements, antioxidants. I did some fasting. I did a lot of sweating. And I was just looking at what can I do. And I got stuck, because fats were the area that was the most difficult to understand, and there were contradictions that I couldn't resolve.
Yeah.
And for instance, they said omega-6s are essential, which means you can't make them, you got to have them, you got to get them from outside.
Yeah.
If you don't get enough, you go down. If you don't get enough long enough, you die. And if you bring them back before you die, all of these symptoms of deficiency are reversed.
Right.
That's what essential means. So it says omega-6s are essential nutrients. You can't make them in your body and you have to have them. And they give you cancer and kill you. And it just drove me crazy.
Huh.
It just drove me crazy. How can something that is an essential building block for health be at the same time the same thing that kills you? And I said, no, that can't be happening. And it was that trying to resolve that contradiction that got me looking at the damage done by processing and by food preparation.
Yeah.
And the fact that our essential fatty acids, omega-3s even more than omega-6s, are the most sensitive of our essential nutrients, and they need the most care, and we give them the least care.
Oh, absolutely.
And I said, you know what? I can't get healthy on damaged oils. We should make them with health in mind. I'm going to do it. And then the year after I got poisoned, I was already thinking about this. It was shown that omega-3s are also essential, because for omega-6s, it was known in 1929. For omega-3s, that was established in 1981, the year after I got poisoned.
Huh.
And I said, oh my God, and they're 5 times more sensitive. Every cell needs them. 99% of the population doesn't get enough. And I had an orgasm. It's like, oh my God, if we could make omega-3s with health in mind, and I had been already building like a tight system that protects them from light, oxygen, and heat, which did damage the essential fatty acids. If we could bring those back, we could help so many people. And that was like, I was on fire. I'm still on fire because for some reason, I don't know what it is. For some reason, there's something built into human being that helping other people live better lives is a total turn on.
Yeah.
And so then I was on fire. Then we, you know, then I developed a scheme for what the manufacturing method would need to look like to be really, it has to be really tight, because light is very small and molecules are very small. So light and oxygen are a problem, and you want to run them not at temperatures where the seed cake comes out smoking because it's been burned from the friction, because the friction is so hard. So we had to do it different. And so out of that came flax oil in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And then we traveled around in a van without air conditioning in the U.S. in 1988. I slept on the floor of the van between the steering wheel and the back. I had a driver who had built himself a bunk in the back. We had our clothes on a broomstick inside the double doors. No. And the hottest months of the year, July, August, and half of June, half of September, 101 days.
Yeah.
We would every second or third day when we'd get all sticky, we would walk into a Marriott hotel like we owned it.
Yeah.
And go to the workout place. And if they had a pool, we'd go for a swim in the pool.
We'd wash
our clothes in the shower, wring them out, and then go back and continue on our journey.
It's similar to the musician's life when I was younger. It's the same kind of thing you have to do when you're traveling. Whatever you can do to make things happen, to get things rolling.
Exactly. The point is, you know, and I was really shy. You know, I came out of the Second World War, so I was very inhibited.
Mm.
And I didn't like talking in front of people. And, you know, if I had more than two eyeballs looking at me, I found it difficult.
Where were you during the war?
I was born in Poland when it was part of Germany.
Oh, is that right?
I was not three yet when we were refugees fleeing out of Poland, with the communists chasing us in tanks and trucks. And we were fleeing down roads that were only had refugees on them, like mostly women and young children on horse-drawn hay wagons.
Oh, wow.
And the Allies, and there were no soldiers on those roads, and the Allies were using us as target practice. And so it was really, it was a very intense time. I'm not very impressed with either side of any war.
Yeah.
You know, especially when, you know, you say you have a just war. Well, how just is your war for the kids?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
And so anyway, so I was very shy, and I read a lot of books because books were safe. And I didn't want, if I had to do a project in class in front of the class, I'd find a reason not to go to school. I mean, I was really shy.
Yeah.
And then, but because I got so fired up about this project, this thing, I had a mission. There was a mission. Here was something worth doing, right?
Yeah.
And it just dragged me through all of my shyness. And now I get on stage, I have no butterflies, not, you know, it's because it's about service.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, you don't get shy when you're giving a gift, you know,
absolutely.
you get shy when you think people are going to judge you.
Yeah.
And of course people did judge me. I thought always people will judge me. And what if somebody gets up and knows more than I do?
Yeah.
You know? And so, but the fact that this enthusiasm that happened because I just saw, oh my God, we can help so many people.
Yeah.
That dragged me through all my stuff. Yes, that was my self-cure for my war experience.
Oh wow.
In a way.
I mean, it's interesting that there's also that sort of early trauma. I mean, I tend to work with a lot of people who either have a lot of, you know, psychological, psycho-emotional stuff going on that leads to chronic, you know, physical issues.
Of course.
So I work back and forth with a lot of therapists and you know, just seeing the way this stuff manifests in people. And then, you know, just the programming and the behavioral things that come out of that. It's sort of interesting that when you know, like for just with your story that you just shared, you know, going through something that was, you know, so emotional that you went to an extreme for a period of time and that led you into this too.
And then I went in the other extreme.
Yeah,
you know,
back again. Right.
Uncurtailed enthusiasm, you know. Yeah. And when I look back now, because I also do like an inner practice of discovering, like getting present in my own life.
Yeah.
You know, we were all born one with the creator, whatever that is. It's an energy, it's a consciousness, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Every human being, every creature on the planet is, you know, has God living inside of them. And then, but then we come into a culture that lives in denial of that. That's
totally
kind of parked it. Like we've parked the godlikeness in a master and other cultures in other masters. We've parked that when what they were saying is that what is in me is in you.
Yeah.
Everything I have, you have. The only difference between them and us was that they actually took time to sit still and get present in their life. And we at best dabble in it.
Right, exactly.
And or we just mostly we just carry a whole head trip about it. Yeah. And the head trip is mostly bullshit.
Yeah. And we're being pulled out of that presence just all the time. And especially now, I mean, it's been a real struggle just, I think, for a lot of people right now going through the pandemic. And I'm very aware I have a 9-year-old and a 16-year-old. And so, you know, just understanding how pulled in these different directions technology that has been so well thought out to really take us out of that place and keep us in that space is really affecting kids and when they can't live without that in a group of people where they're you know being forced to kind of intermingle and react to other human beings they can get, you know, very deep down that technological hole.
Right. And although I don't think it's different than it was 1,000 years ago, because you only need one distraction to disconnect from yourself.
That might be true.
And we've got 1,000 of them, but you only need one. So we have lots of choices of which way to disconnect.
Yeah, that's true.
But the disconnection is automatic. It's part of the human journey. Because when you're in your mother's body, I call it the Buddha tank. Right? In the Buddha tank, there's nothing to do, nowhere to go. Everything's taken care of and it's safe, generally speaking.
Right.
And in that place, you're just floating around in this tank. Your body is being created. You're not in charge of any of that. Like you as a body, you're not in charge of that. Life is just creating you. And so you're in the bliss of the Buddha. Mm-hmm. And you get 9 months there. And then you come out. And your awareness, by the way, when you're inside, is at rest inside in its source in life, because there's nowhere to go. Right?
Yeah.
So then you come out, and now you got to get to know the world. And you first, it's mom, and then it's cuckoo, and then it's food, and then it's diapers and sleep. And, you know, and then they say, ask for what you want. And then you learn language and, you know, and you get to know the world that you need to survive in. And that's important. But in that process, your awareness goes from present inside, absent outside, to present outside, absent inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And when that happens, you are disconnected from yourself. and you lose that experience of your core being. It is still there. It's just your awareness wandered off. Mm. And that's all it takes to come back, is to bring the awareness back. Yeah. That's why a self-knowledge practice, in a way, is the cure for everything. Because when you come back to it, if you do, because most people don't, but if you do, you come back to it, and now you say, oh my God, the peace that I was looking for out there has always been within me. It has all been the core of my being. And guess what? Now that I see peace in me, I see it everywhere. Yeah. Peace has always been everywhere, but only peace can see it.
Right.
And so you get into back to that peace. Now the world looks peaceful. Now you start living into it like it was peaceful. Now you start creating a culture of peace. But it begins with coming back home to yourself. And so then let's assume that, you know, I'm in the pandemic too, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm not distracted by the pandemic, because I can listen to CNN and all of the stuff they do. And like, you know, there's another agenda, because anything if CNN does for more than 2 days, there's got to be some other agenda. And they've been doing it now for months.
Right.
And I can listen to that and not become afraid, because something in me, the place that's in peace and the energy that is life and the inspiration that is the shine of it, those are not affected by a pandemic.
Right.
Those are not affected at all. Body can be affected. And so I do wash my hands and I do pay attention, and we are doing some physical distancing.
Yeah.
I wash my veggies. I didn't used to do that all the time. I wash my veggies and my fruits with soap before I eat them. So I do some, and I eat a lot of garlic. Mm-hmm. That's really good for the distancing.
Yeah.
and I also clean out my nose with acid water, but you can also do that with salt water. Mm-hmm. And I take digestive enzymes, open them in my mouth, because they will eat the viruses that they get in touch with.
Yeah, tell me about that. What do you use for digestive enzymes?
Digestive enzymes. I have a set of enzymes. It's under the Flora label. The one I use in the U.S. is called Advanced Adult Formula. It's high in protease. Protease is the most important enzyme, mm-hmm. because foreign proteins cause so many immune reactions.
Yeah.
They trigger the immune system. If they're foreign proteins, the immune system says, enemy. And so what I do is I open the capsule in my mouth and just swish it around in my mouth. I can do it maybe 3 times a day.
Okay.
And it literally, any virus it comes in contact with, it'll eat its feet or its skin.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts the virus out of commission.
Right.
And so I do that on a regular basis. If you do that too much, your tongue will tingle just like it does when you eat too much pineapple, because that's a sign that the proteases are beginning to chew up your tongue.
Gotcha.
Like they will digest your tongue. They don't care what they digest as long as it's protein.
Right.
As long as it's protein, right? And so then you have to back off a little bit. So I can do it about 2 or 3 times a day without that happening.
Yeah.
And when you're snotty, then you can actually do that more often than when you don't have a cold.
Does this have any impact on allergies, on histamine sort of response going on at this time of year? Different things coming in, you know, through the mouth or nose.
Well, I don't have any allergies other than if I look at the sun, I sneeze.
Okay.
And if I want to sneeze, then I look at the sun. I can do it 2 or 3 times in a row. I don't have any other noticeable allergies. If you break down the proteins in the pollen or whatever it is you're allergic to, that would do it. I have not tried to see if the enzymes taken orally and swooshed in the mouth, because you need them up your nose too.
Right.
Because in the nose, I think is as much of the trigger as in your mouth.
Yeah.
And I would probably, instead of using enzymes there, I would use salt water or acid water. I use acid water from a Kangen machine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that because you basically want to wash out the pollen or whatever it is that you're allergic to as much as you can out of your nasal oral buckle.
Yeah. Yeah, it just crossed my mind just as another.
Yeah, it's a good question.
And also because I think there are a lot of people right now who are a little, you know, they're nervous about what's happening. Environment. They can't tell whether or not maybe they have a virus or the beginning of a cold or it's allergy season. There's all these different things sort of, you know, cropping up right now. So,
right. But here's the thing. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. You open the capsule in your mouth, see if it makes any difference. You'll notice the difference. I've taken a cold that usually takes 7 to 9 days on a train from Switzerland to Austria, where I had to give a talk and it was a night train. And my whole head was full of snot. and I used enzymes. I probably an eight hour train ride. I don't remember exactly, but it was overnight and I got there maybe at 8 a.m. And by the time I had left Switzerland and I was just doing this with enzymes all night, I didn't get a lot of sleep. I did that all night. And by the next morning, by the next evening, I was ready to do my talk and I wasn't stuffed up at all.
Oh, wow.
So it's very powerful when you do it right.
Yeah, I have to try.
So that. I would just say if you have stuff that might have that, as you asked the question, right? I would just say try it. They're just enzymes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're just enzymes. Don't, when your tongue tingles, back off a little. You know, take enzymes with your food too, because if you take a load off your digestive system.
Yeah.
Then you take a load off the immune system too, because the immune system gets involved in digestion as its first job when digestion isn't working properly.
Yeah.
So make digestion work properly, and enzymes are found in raw foods. So they do up to 60% of the digestion of the food for you if you chew your foods properly, which nobody does, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and if you replace the enzymes or add enzymes, what you're doing is you're just taking more of a load off of your body so that your body becomes stronger and your immune system becomes more capable of doing all the other things that it needs to do, allergy being one of those.
Yeah.
So I would suspect that it would work, but you could try it for yourself, because if it doesn't work, you're either not doing it right or it isn't working for you.
Yeah.
But my guess is it would work for a lot of people.
If we can go back to the sort of 1980-1981 period, when you went through this transition, was there something else? I mean, you know, I think this is one of those things that I see people go through a lot of times and I experienced it myself. When you go through a health crisis of some sort, you know, you really have to start focusing on like all the basics, you know, what you're eating, how you're sleeping, your relationships, all these kinds of things. Was there any like besides the food part of things at that point, was there anything that really shifted for you with that? How much impact do you think changing your diet had on those other pieces?
Okay, my diet was pretty good. Like when we, you know, I ate a lot of whole foods. I when I had my job as a pesticide sprayer, I would take raw cabbage as lunch. And carrots and stuff like that, just because it was simple. I didn't have to cook it and I didn't have to spend time in it. I always thought everything else was more important than cooking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like good food, but I didn't want to cook. For me, it was like I always had things to do that I thought were more important. Right. So my diet wasn't bad. I think the reason I survived is because I was already eating pretty well.
Right.
But then I paid attention to supplements. I began that and like I said, antioxidants and sweating. Because the reason for sweating is that you can sweat out water-soluble toxins in your body, and they will show up in the water part of your sweat, and oil-soluble toxins will show up in the oil part of your sweat.
Hmm.
So if you want to sweat out oil-soluble toxins, then what you do is you get good oils that aren't damaged, so you're not getting more toxins from them. So you get good oils, like you could do it with olive oil, you could do it with flax oil, udos oil, coconut oil, any of those. And then you eat those, you eat more of those, and then you're literally especially if they're rich in essential fatty acids, they're driven out towards the surface of your body because they have negative charges that repel the molecules from each other.
Right. Right.
And they will pick up toxins and end up in your skin, and you can sweat out oil-soluble toxins, and you'll find them in the oil part of the skin,
okay.
in the oil part of the sweat. And so so I did that. I was already doing a self-knowledge practice.
Okay.
That was very helpful because, again, it's like in a way that was my pandemic, right? Self-imposed, right. self-pandemic, right?
Right, right.
So I screwed it up, and yet I had a place to go, because the moment that you take 10 minutes and close your eyes and you just see how still you can get, and then see how deeply still you can get, and then see how open you can be in that stillness, and then see how long you can stay there. And you do that for 5 minutes, and you actually feel pretty amazing inside. And then in that place, there is no pandemic.
Right.
In that place,
right.
There is no pesticide poisoning. In that place is just awareness. But it's peaceful and it's beautiful. And especially when you're stressed, it's like that's what you're looking for.
Right.
It's kind of like, how do you become aware of what is in the space your body occupies besides your body?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's energy in that space and there's awareness in that space. And your life is your master. You know, you're not even the body. Like if I said to you, whose body is that? Most people would say, that's my body. You just told me you're not the body. You just told me you're the owner. So then who is the owner?
Right.
Well, people don't know. Then they give their name. I said, no, that's just the label somebody gave you.
Right.
So who is the owner? Well, if you think about it, life is the owner. And life is omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient in your body. That's the definition of God. Right?
Right, right.
Knows everything, runs everything, weighs nothing, is all power, and is everywhere present in your body. Yeah, when you get in touch with that, you're in an ocean of answers for which you have never even developed questions or problems for. And then you're whole. Then you're whole. And from that wholeness, you can rebuild everything. All of your dramas and your traumas and all of the crazy shit that went on from the time you were born is resolved in that place. And from that place, you can go back to living your life for the beauty of life instead of living your life for the memory of trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I certainly went through some of this, a similar process. And also I think in a way being led pretty deep into the sciences. I mean, after I had sort of my chronic back pain period and just, I couldn't get enough of both, you know, both the sort of nutritional sciences, different kinds of body work, you know, models and energy sciences and stuff. And I think when you go into, you know, very deep into that, down to the molecular level, as I know you have with all this stuff, it's hard not to see the same wholeness in terms of...
Oh, yeah. If you know what? If you look deeply enough into music, you'll find it too. If you look deeply enough into anything, you will always find that thing in you, in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going on the outside to get to the inside. You know, what made the masters special? They didn't play instruments and, you know, they didn't do science.
Yeah.
They just lived in that presence. And they said, you know what? You want to live in that presence? Just go there.
Right.
It's not conditional. It's not like when you do this and this, when you follow this formula, when you repeat this prayer, when you. Mm-hmm. No. Just go there because it's already there. It's already waiting for you. All you need to do is bring your awareness inside. And it takes practice to get good at it. Just like it took practice to get good at taking your awareness out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just like anything you're new at takes some practice. But the point is that everything you're looking for is already there. You already have it. And you want to be peaceful in the middle of a pandemic, then go home.
right?
And because you're the peace in the building called your body, in the building called your house. In the building called the planet.
Right.
And somewhere along there's coronas floating around but there's no corona in your peace, and there's no corona in your life energy, and there's no corona in your inspiration.
Yeah.
Corona is a physical thing that affects the physical body. So you can say, you can say, I don't have corona, just my body does.
Right.
But you can only say that and not have it be stupid if you actually experience it that way.
Yeah.
And to me, the blessing of corona, if I can say it, is we had a little virus that nobody can see that has put the entire human race on hold. It's like a timeout to think about who are you, how are you living, what the hell are you doing, and is there something you need to change? And so for, you know, that could be the transformation of the world. None of the masters, by the way, were able to pull that off, you know, not in their whole lifetime. And corona did it in 2 months.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's not based on any religion or any philosophy or anything, but the time out, this time alone to be able to be with yourself and to begin to notice how incredibly beautiful it is to be alive and how magnificent you are as a creature. You, no, I don't mean just you. I mean everybody listening. I mean everybody not listening too, right?
Right.
How magnificent all creatures are. And then from there, what kind of a world do you want to create? That is the world created by magnificent creatures. It'd be a whole lot different from, oh, you piss me off and I'm going to kill you and... You know, the wars and the financial wars and the, you know, you did that to me and you know the Fox CNN controversy.
Right.
You know, it's like
right.
it all comes from discontent.
Yeah,
and discontent comes from disconnection to self. It's like, okay, well, it's time to come home.
Yeah, and all that is tribalism in some way, and it's
right.
very similar to what has led to any sort of war.
Right.
Speaking of wars and masters, I've been reading one of Thich Nhat Hanh's books. Are you familiar with him?
A little bit.
He's an amazing guy. He was Vietnamese, and his life was devastated by the Vietnam War. And he talks about just what you were talking about being able to come home to yourself through this inner practice, and that life is not about what's happened to you, but about what's happening right now. I think we can get very sort of stuck in things that happened to us, as you were sort of talking about those traumas, it's very easy to, you know, continue to carry those along with us. And I think, you know, from my experience with back pain, there was a part of that was really about carrying everything. You know, there was a very strong wounded warrior archetype. And
for sure. And you know, the thing is that when you have trauma, you know, there's a place for dealing with the trauma. So you learn some thoughts, you got some beliefs, and you got some ways of coping that were responsive to the trauma. And if you're going to live untraumatic, then you may have to change some habits and change some thoughts, and you know, the counseling process and the, what we do to deal with that it has a place.
Yeah.
It's just that there are two things you have to do. One is to deal with the trauma, and the other one is get back to life. And getting back to life is not, you know, the trauma didn't force you to disconnect from your life.
Yeah. Right.
That was a choice you made, although you maybe didn't see the choice. But you disconnected from life, and you need to reconnect from life. And that's a solitary journey.
Right.
And the counseling, the social part of the trauma, somebody did something to you. The social part is it's helpful to have a social process to process that through.
Yeah.
But there are two things going on, and we tend to do the outside part, the social process, and we tend to neglect the inner process that is as important and in the long run more important than the social process.
And takes a lot more kind of steadfastness and...
Well, it takes self-responsibility and commitment.
Yeah.
Self-commitment.
Yeah.
Commitment to yourself. Commitment to say, you know what? A part of every day I'm going to spend enjoying my life and letting the world wait.
Yeah.
And guess what? When you're done, the world will be there waiting.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not like, you know, so taking a break from the world, shutting off your television if it gets on your nerves. Because when I shut off my television, I'm in my living room. It is so peaceful here.
Yeah.
It is so peaceful here, you know. And if I can get out of my head, which is where all my thoughts run around, just in my kneecap or in my bum sitting on the chair or in my feet touching the ground or in my shoulders or my neck or my, you know, anything, right? There's no thoughts in any part of my body except the surface of my cortex.
Right.
So change the focus. Take it out of there and put it somewhere, anywhere else. Why breathing is always part of it is because there's no thoughts in your breath.
Yeah.
So if you can bring your attention to your breathing instead of your attention to your thinking, you're instantly free of thoughts. Even your mind will still continue doing its job, which is think and correlate and synthesize. And, you know, that's its job. It'll never stop doing that job, but you don't have to be paying attention to that all the time.
That's very important. It's very important to remember right now.
Yeah. So you want to talk about oils?
Well, sure. You know, maybe we won't. I mean, this is great. This went a totally different direction than I was planning, but I love it. I had a feeling that we might end up in this kind of conversation. So I'm glad it went there. But because I know you're gonna offer listeners the oil change ebook, and course, the mini course. Maybe we don't have to go too deep into everything, but just to maybe kind of give a little teaser. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I have a ton of questions just from going through it, and I've even done a fair amount of nutritional studying, but I don't think I've really gotten as much information about oils and about just how damaging it is to cook with oils, and then, you know, which oils are sort of better for us. So I'm not sure how you want to present this in a short way.
Okay, I'll just race through it. Okay, so when it comes to oils, there are two essential fatty acids. These are the essential nutrients from oils. There's just two of them, omega-3 and omega-6.
Yeah.
We need them both. They are both of them have functions in every cell in the body. We get a lot of omega-6s, but we get them from oils that are partially damaged. And the damage done to oils, in a tablespoon of a usual oil, there's about, if it's 1% damage, which is in the ballpark, mm-hmm. You get 60 quintillion damaged molecules in a tablespoon of that oil, 1% damaged. That's more than a million damaged molecules for every one of your body's 60 trillion cells. And that's because these oils are damaged by the processing in order to give them a longer shelf life, and they're treated with Drano, then with window washing acid, then they're bleached with bleaching clays, which turns them rancid, and then they have to be deodorized at frying temperature to blow off the rancid molecules.
Yeah.
And the industry knows what the results are, because that's in the research now, but they didn't when they began 110 years ago, 120 years ago. So that's how long we've had oils made by industry the way we have them now.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be in plastic, because oils swell plastics, and plastics leach into oil quicker and more abundantly than into water.
Yeah.
But they're all in plastic bottles. The most of the oils we use have omega-6s in them, almost all of them actually, mm-hmm. to different amounts. For olive, 10%, and for safflower and sunflower and corn, 60 to 70%. Mm-hmm. So we're not short of omega-6s. We do get them with some damage. But 99% of the population does not get enough omega-3s for optimum health.
Okay.
Every cell needs them. They are five times more sensitive to damage than omega-6s, so they're a nightmare to work with. In order to work with them, you have to give them the care they need, and you might as well give that care to the omega-6s too. And that means you have to protect them from light, oxygen, heat while they're being pressed, being settled, being filtered, being filled. Mm-hmm. They go in brown glass bottles. You put a box around them. They're kept in the fridge, in the supplement section, in the health food stores.
Yep.
This is like, so there's a lot of, we're doing a lot to care for the oils, and they have a 1-year shelf life under refrigeration.
Okay.
Once you open them, you want to use them in 8 weeks because oxygen gets in and then the oil starts to oxidize. And if you freeze them solid, you can get 3 years on them because when you freeze them solid, molecules don't move. And when molecules don't move, you don't get chemical reactions.
Gotcha.
So this is, and we're talking about oils that are like perishable vegetables, perishable foods.
Yeah.
And they are perishable.
Right, exactly.
If your food is not perishable, you should probably not eat it.
That's
right?
True, right.
And people say, eat things that spoil. Just eat them before they do.
Yeah.
Right? That's good advice.
Right.
And nature's mandate for every creature is fresh, whole, raw, organic. And then it's also local and seasonal and basically weather ripened, whatever that means. So that's the standard toward which everybody ought to be heading if they want to be physically healthier, from wherever they are, in the direction of fresh, whole, raw, organic.
Yeah.
The worst thing we ever learned to do with foods is to fry them.
Yeah.
So I have a slogan: fried oils fry health.
Yeah.
That's not hard to remember, and fried foods fry health. The reason why is because the oils are sensitive to damage, but when you burn the food, because what happens is the outside dries out, so the water goes out of it, mm-hmm. then it overheats. And then you're changing molecules, because if you turn something from green to brown, or from brown to dark brown, or from yellow to black, you know you've changed chemistry. And the chemistry for which your life made your genetic program is the chemistry of nature on planet Earth. And nature on planet Earth made a genetic program for fresh, whole, raw, organic. Every step you take out of line with that, you lose something in your health after a while.
Yeah.
And every step you could take back, you get something back. And it might take some time. So when we came out with flaxseed oil in 1986, that was my first oil. Mm-hmm. Because it was a source of omega-3s, and those they had just been established as essential. So we were excited. We never used it for frying, ever, ever, ever. If you want to, you know, people ask me sometimes, what can I use for frying? I say water. Because when you fry your foods in water, you don't burn them.
Right. Yeah.
And people say, well, how do I do my steak? Well, when I was a kid, we ate mostly cooked food because frying was not as popular as it is around the world now.
Right.
It's a stupid habit that everybody is doing. And what we used to do is we used to cut the meat into cubes, throw them in the stew with vegetables and spices.
Right.
And it tasted really good, and it wasn't burned, and it wasn't bad for us. Not as good as raw, but raw is the issue with meat. Raw is you don't know if it's contaminated or not.
Right.
So if it's contaminated, you got to cook it. And you got to be really clean for it not to be contaminated. And definitely our meat growing and slaughtering places are not clean.
Right.
The sushi chef who wipes his meat after every cut, you know, and washes his hands all the time and washes his cloth all the time, you know, they're pretty careful. So they're pretty good at not making you sick with raw fish.
Yeah.
Fish now is the dirtiest meat on the planet because everything goes downhill and ends up in the ocean.
Yeah.
And the higher it is in the food chain, the more toxic it is. So
Right. Salmon
is out these days for me. I used to eat it all the time.
Yep.
And your body can make what the fish oils contain if you get enough of the omega-3 from plants, the ones in flax. The ones in psyllium seed has some, and kukui nut has some, and there's a little bit in walnut, and a little bit in soybean, and a little bit in canola. Flaxseed oil has a lot more omega-6 than omega-3. Omega-3 than omega-6.
Yeah.
And you can become omega-6 deficient. I actually did. That's why I developed a blend.
Okay.
The balance between the two is important. They compete, and if you get too much of one, it crowds out the other.
Is that why you created something? Because outside of flaxseed, what other oils have high levels of omega-3s?
Well, the next highest easily available is hemp seed, but hemp seed has 17% omega-3 and 57% omega-6,
okay.
Whereas flax has 57% omega-3 and 14% omega, 15% omega-6.
Yeah.
So hemp is not as good because it's too low. We use twice as much omega-3. That's where we've always seen the best results, but not four times as much like Flaxol does.
Right.
And I became omega-6 deficient on Flaxol. I got dry skin, dry eyes, thin skin.
Yeah.
Thin was really, it felt really weird.
Yeah.
And I got arthritis, like pain in finger joints, thin papery skin. Yeah. Yep. And I had one other thing, dry eyes, skipped heartbeats.
Huh.
Yeah. And then I ate sunflower seeds, which only have omega-6s to fix that. And it all went away. And I said, okay, you know what? I'm trying to get people healthy. I don't want to do that with an oil that can actually make them sick if they use it by itself. And so we made the blend as the one shot deal for people's essential fatty acid needs, so they wouldn't have to think about it. Because people would say to me, oh, this is all complicated. Is there one thing I can take that gets me all the good stuff and none of the bad stuff? And so that was the blend was an answer to that question, as well as my experience of becoming omega-6 deficient on flax oil.
And over the past 20 or 30 years, olive oil has become much bigger in the U.S., as has coconut oil.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, I think neither of them are very high in omega-3s. Is that right?
No, flax oil has. Olive oil has less than 1% omega-3. It doesn't even have much omega-6. The reason why it's popular is because it's not damaged by the processing. They do a different process on olive oil because it comes from the flesh of the olive.
Right.
So there are two issues with fats. One is, you got to get the essential fatty acids in the right ratio and not damaged. The second one is the damage done by processing. Olive oil is good on the not damage done. And so is virgin coconut oil. But coconut oil has virtually none of either omega-3 or omega-6. But coconut oil became really, really popular because somebody wrote a book on coconut. I think it was called the Coconut Miracle or something like that. Coconut Oil Miracle or something like that.
Yeah.
And in that book, he made every claim for coconut oil that can be legitimately made for omega-3s on the basis of existing research. And I went and looked it up. I was shocked when I saw the book. So I looked it up on Medline. There was not one of the claims had research behind it.
Hmm.
Not one. And then they said something for thyroid. There was no human thyroid study. There was one study in mice, and I think that study was inconclusive.
Yeah.
So basically, and that made coconut very, very popular. Of course, the other reason why coconut and olive are popular is because they are pretty stable. When you work with the good oils, they're not very stable. So you have to give them extra care, refrigeration, nitrogen flushing, you know, dark bottles, box around it, you know. So the best oils need care. And most people don't care enough to give them the care. They just want, that's why the keto diet doesn't work very well long term.
Right.
It would if it was based on the essential fatty acids.
Right.
That's why throwing butter or coconut in your coffee is not nearly as good as putting Udo's oil in it, because you get the omega-3 and 6, and the omega-3s are give you higher energy. 40 to 60% increase in stamina we measured in athletes after a month of a tablespoon per 50 pounds of body weight per day of that blend.
And this is the one thing that I've always been interested in too. I mean, through all the different, you know, ways that I've worked in my career, is that ultimately what I think most people are kind of trying to work on is improve their energy, their vitality. And yet they don't feed it well enough. You know, you can exercise, you know, all you want. That might make you feel good for a while, but, you know, you can really wear yourself down by doing stuff like that. And, you know, the same can be said for a lot of different things, but feeding yourself correctly is always going to improve your state of wellness, your mood, all these different things.
Well, yeah, it has to. You know, if you make a car out of junk, you know, probably on the first drive, your fender falls off.
Right.
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 Yeah. Well, the body's like that too. And there are essential nutrients that it has to have. Those are the basic building blocks. If you don't get those optimized, you're not going to have optimum health.
Yeah.
And if you don't have optimum health, you're not going to have optimum stamina and optimum performance and optimum healing and optimum recovery. That's just the law. And if you do get the oils right, omega-3 and 6 form a barrier in the skin against the loss of moisture. So they are the best moisturizer, and they make skin soft, smooth, and velvety.
Yeah.
And it's probably the thing that people rant about the most when they start taking the oil. They notice the effect on their skin.
Yeah.
I always say, take a month, tablespoon per 50 pounds of body weight per day for a month, mixed in food, spread out over the course of the day, and notice what happens in a month. Some people notice it in days, and some people even notice the difference in hours.
Do you ever hear from anyone that, you know, that starting this way helps them to transition off of the frying with the oils? Because I think that's got to be one of the hardest parts for people to transition.
I've heard more that they transition off high-carb diets and lose weight.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the craving goes away because you're getting stable energy.
Yeah.
Whereas carbs give you up and down energy. You know, your spikes your mood, spikes your insulin, spikes your blood sugar.
Yeah.
And then spikes your hunger.
Yeah.
And so that's what we've got the most of. Honestly, the change from frying to not frying, I would say depends less on the oil than on one decision that you make.
Yeah.
When you know that fried oils fry your health, and you know that the foods you fry your health, and you know that the burnt stuff that you say you like so much, if you scraped it together on a spoon and ate it off a spoon, it would squeak between your teeth. It's scratchy. It's acrid. It's bitter and it tastes disgusting. Once you get that clear, you know, and then I tell them one more thing. I say, listen, you got a frying pan. You all have a frying pan. I know. When you go home, take out the frying pan, turn it upside down, hit yourself on the head with it really hard. So it's associated with pain, because that thing will give you pain if you don't throw the damn thing out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I think one of the other things that you had suggested, which I think might be helpful for some people, is that, you know, if you're going to start using it on your vegetables, if you're going to steam your vegetables, you can use the oil on your vegetables. You just don't fry with it.
Yeah, you put them on after. Put good oils on the food after it comes off the heat.
Yeah.
You can even put it on your fried food after it comes off the heat, but.
Please,
will you do me a favor? I'm trying to help you. don't fry your foods. Go in the direction of fresh, whole, raw, organic. If you're frying, start boiling. If you're boiling, start steaming. If you're steaming, start eating more things raw.
Yeah.
You know, if you're eating processed, eat less processed. Get more fresh. Get more organic. If you're eating non-organic, go in the direction of organic. If you can't afford all organic foods, then buy as many as you can organic.
Mm-hmm.
So just do something. Just take little steps.
Yeah.
And give yourself a year or give yourself 2 years. But you can completely redo your diet and live in line with nature for health within a year or two.
Yeah.
Easily done. Easily done.
That's great advice. And it's, you know, if anyone's interested in reading a little bit more, you've got a ton of stuff on your blog. So, you know, if people need some inspiration or to be reminded of any of these pieces, I'll put that up in show notes so people can check that out.
Perfect. And I think there's some freebies there.
Yeah. And there's
I don't know what the freebies are, because I have a team that works with all that stuff. I'm the talent, and they're the
gotcha.
They're the organizers.
and Udo's oil, can you get at I believe at Whole Foods and some other health stores?
It's in the fridge in all the health food stores, and you can also get it on Amazon. Okay. Once you get it, stick it in your freezer or your fridge. Okay. I buy it by the case and stick it in my freezer because I don't want to buy a bottle every week. Right. So I get it by the case, stick it in the freezer, take out the bottle I'm using, put it in my fridge.
Yeah.
Leave it in the fridge till it's gone.
Okay,
8 weeks in the fridge once it's open.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Well, thanks so much, Udo. Yeah. This was great. So much great information for everybody. And I feel like we are at a very specific time right now where I think people can focus on all of this just a little bit more. You were the person I was excited to talk to you about this.
Yeah, all the things that people say have had the excuse. I'd like to do that, but I don't have the time. Y'all got the time now. Do all those things that you claimed you didn't want to do unless it was just an excuse.
Yeah,
because no, and it's really time to re-examine. We can't do environment the way we've been doing it. We can't do politics the way we've been doing it.
Right.
We can't do relationships the way we've been doing them, and we can't do health the way we've been doing it. So we need to rethink how we live in every aspect, and it comes back to, and it starts with you in your place, creating a better life, creating a better experience of your life.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Udo.
And I'm happy to do this again.
All right. Sounds good. I think we definitely have a part two in us.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.
Udo Erasmus, folks. This is one of my favorite conversations. I started this podcast with the idea of exploring health to these depths, where science meets the essence of living. To be healthy is to strive for this balance, to fail and re-engage, to understand ourselves and our own nature, and our relationship to nature, and to explore what we as living creatures can achieve together. Let me know what you thought of this topic in conversation. You can always reach me at jeremy@highway2.health. And for those of you interested in the free ebook and mini course he has offered to Highway to Health listeners, go to udoerasmus.com/highway, and you can also find the link here in the show notes. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.